What's up, Bard Flies? Kevin Condardo here, from No Holds Barred. Before we dig into this week's episode, I want to apologize for a technical error. As I discovered when editing this week's episode, it turns out that my microphone wasn't so much, quote-unquote, plugged in while we were recording. Rather than delay this episode's release any further by doing a re-recording, I'm just going to go ahead and upload with my less-than-optimal audio here. Apologies from all of us at No Holds Barred, and in exchange, next week's episode will be on us. Here we go.
What is up, you whining schoolboys? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. We're back with our monthly wildcard episode, where our goal every month is to give you some listening that is at least but so-so. This month we're going to try something many people have been clamoring for on email and Twitter and Facebook, but we haven't actually gotten around to doing yet. We've gotten several emails throughout our first 70-something episodes regarding doing interviews, both from our listeners requesting that we should start doing them, and from authors or other artists requesting to join us for an episode to talk about the projects they're working on. We've resisted going down that road so far because there are all sorts of Shakespeare podcasts that whose exclusive focus is on interviews, but as far as we know, only one Shakespeare podcast that focus on things like Shakespearean-influenced pornographic film titles, so we've decided to stay in our lane and not go down the interview road. Right. Today, however, we got the opportunity to sit down with the director of the first American-originated production of Jonathan Bate's play Being Shakespeare and pick his brain about working on that production, and how could we turn that down?
Right.
So after the break, I hope you'll join me in welcoming to the podcast the director of that production, the esteemed Dan Bollier.
Here we go.
Welcome to the program, Mr. Bollier.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here.
It's a real pleasure to have you. So if you could really quick, so as you just finished directing this production of Being Shakespeare a couple of weeks ago. That was in early October.
That's correct. It closed a week ago.
Could you give us a quick overview of what this play is?
Sure. Being Shakespeare is basically a look at the life of William Shakespeare through the use of the device that they use is the seven stages of man speech. And it basically breaks down Shakespeare's life into seven stages. The first six stages use Shakespeare's words, collected writings things that we know about Shakespeare, either Shakespeare or his family, pieces of paper that have lived on that we still have records of, and try to basically give what Shakespeare's life may have looked like. It's really, for me, it's a conclusive argument in favor that Shakespeare was Shakespeare, that it wasn't anyone else. And it breaks down why and how and shows how those things that happened in his life crept into the play.
So is
crept into his plays, rather.
It's focused on, would you say its focus is on the authorship question, or that's just a byproduct?
That's a byproduct. It really is just like, who was Shakespeare?
Okay.
And in the seventh stage, the climax, I think, is... We know that towards the end, Shakespeare and Ben Jonson and Drayton had a night of drinking that seems to have gone far into the night. Shakespeare contracted a fever and died from that. Or late night drinking and died from a fever there and contracted. So the author in the seventh stage sort of postulates what might Jonson and Shakespeare have talked about? So finally we see this actor who has been playing all the different roles throughout the play finally take on the role of Shakespeare in the concluding moments, which are absolutely beautiful.
It's kind of, I feel like it's prescient or maybe ominous that Marlowe and Shakespeare and so many others had their last days in a bar, and none of us have learned that lesson. That's interesting.
Here we are today enjoying a fantastic beer while recording this podcast.
So how did you come across this piece? How did you discover Being Shakespeare?
It was actually pretty funny. I went to see it at BAM several years ago. I thought it was an 8 o'clock show, so I arrived at 7:50. It was a 7:30 show.
Mm-hmm.
So I caught the tail end of Act 1 from the lobby, watching on the screen, like the monitor they had there,
mm-hmm.
and then got in to see Act 2 and loved it, loved the play. And then we were looking for, as a company, our mission is to illuminate the works of William Shakespeare.
At Seven Stages Shakespeare
Company. Shakespeare Company, of course. So in terms of what is the first, for us, what's the first non-Shakespearean main stage to do? This seemed like a really good way to do one. And so when people are like, I thought you only did Shakespeare plays. It's like, well, if you look at the mission, this is...
If you refer to the text.
This is about as illuminating as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And is written by someone who is currently living, breathing, communicating with us during the process, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, a Shakespeare play.
Sure. So my next question was going to be, what led you to want to direct it, to take this on? But that kind of addresses that question, I suppose.
Yeah, it does. Also, the other thing was, it's the sort of thing where after seeing it, you really, like, I really want to do the play, to mm-hmm. be in the play, but it seems like just a step too far to be like, come see this one-man show about Shakespeare, starring me as the person telling you about Shakespeare. We have a podcast for that.
It is a level of hubris that being interviewed on your own podcast doesn't quite reach.
Right.
But you're still young. You can get there.
I'll get there eventually. So I just figured I would direct it and go from there.
Yeah. So it is, you know, it is certainly noteworthy that this is the first North American originated production of the show. The show having only toured in its original incantation with Simon Callow, that toured America, this being the first original production. How did Seven Stages acquire the rights for that?
Yeah, we actually reached out. Well, we tried to find the rights for a while and had a hard time doing so. And finally, one day we were talking and we're like, why don't we just try to see if we can get in touch with Jonathan Bate?
Mm-hmm.
And wrote him an email. And he wrote back either that day or the next day and said he'd get in touch with his agency, put us in touch. And from there, we had his advocacy throughout the whole thing, which was super helpful.
So did you, how did he help you throughout the process as you were working on the show? Were you in regular contact or was that kind of like a good luck, see you on the other side?
No, we were in pretty regular contact because when we were talking about, I had some text questions and I wanted to make sure with a play where the author isn't 400 years dead that, you know, what if he wants to make an edit, or what if I have a question about this part here, or some things that... The other thing is, this being written for Simon Callow and written by Jonathan Bate, it certainly had certain phrasings that were distinctly British.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I was wondering if it would be okay with Jonathan if we changed some of the words to make it easier for our audience to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, in talking to him in the very beginning, he mentioned, we had several iterations of this script from all the different versions as it was being developed. So we were talking about the version that we had received from the agency. And so he suggested some things that we could change, some moments that were successful. And just some, he was very, very helpful and very open. And eventually just sent an email and put everything in writing saying, any lines that need to be changed for the... to make it easier for an audience to understand, by all means, feel free.
To Americanize it.
Yeah. I mean, there is very few of those. There are very, very few. It's just certain... the one that jumps out is talking about Queen Elizabeth making a proclamation before seeing off the Spanish Armada.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really struggling with that because for an American to see someone off really means, like, to walk them to the subway.
Mm-hmm.
Or to, like, bring them to their car. Whereas in the British, what he was meaning by seeing off was, like, defeating easily.
Oh.
Which I didn't realize was a phrase. So, like, we changed that to defeating the Spanish Armada.
Huh.
Just like little changes like that. But the structure of the play is really interesting. And it really works. So I didn't want to get in the way of it. We were talking a little bit, actually, just now before hitting record on this. And Kev, and I know that you really admire this about me, but as a director, I tend to get in there and really play and mess with the structure and like to do movement pieces and really avant-garde, really really brilliant stuff, which you told me before you really appreciate.
I hate it.
That's not true.
Anyways, go on.
So with this one, it was just really nice to look at the script and go, this makes perfect sense to me. I'm going to keep it just the way it is and just serve the story, serve the author, serve the text.
Well, that's disappointing.
Simple stuff.
I was unfortunately unable to see this production because of work obligations, so I am even doubly disappointed that I missed the first Dampolier directed show that actually made sense. As this of course is a one man show. How did you go about finding the right actor to be your Shakespeare?
Sure. We are very blessed up here in this community where Seven Stages Shakespeare Company is based to have the fantastic Joel Kolodner living here. And Joel has been working professionally longer than either of us have been alive.
I'm sure he'll be flattered to hear that.
Yeah, what's up, Joel? Well, we're just strapping young bucks, Kev. Let's not forget that.
Please don't use that phrase.
You don't like strapping young bucks?
The young bucks I'm into, but super kick part.
The whole idea of doing a show like this without someone like Joel is really impossible. You need to have an actor who has a certain level of gravitas and command of the language. I mean, he played over 40 Shakespearean characters in 2 hours. It's a 66-page monologue.
Wow.
So it was an absolute showcase piece for Joel. He triumphed in it and was it's sort of thing that you really have to have the actor first. Mm-hmm. It's not the sort of thing you're like, well, we want to do this play. Let's get the rights and then have auditions. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to know you have someone that can carry that load for that long. It came in at 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Or 2:20. And it moved quickly. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the sort of long drawn out thing. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
So you mentioned that the structure really worked well for this play. You mentioned that we go through Shakespeare's seven stages throughout the course of the production.
Yeah.
Looking at Shakespeare's life this way, through Bates' words, through living through this production, what new things did you learn about Shakespeare that you were not aware of before in your other readings and studies?
Sure. One of the things that really jumped out was he does an incredible job in the very beginning talking about the Stratford into which Shakespeare was born. And it really does a nice job because we think about, at least for me, I think about when I visited Stratford. Mm. And of course, that's the Stratford that is 400 years after Shakespeare lived there that has a Lululemon.
Or is that how you pronounce that?
Lululemon. That's how I do. Okay. And Daniel Bollier.
You know that. Yeah, sure.
Very French. Wait. They have an Au Bon Pain.
Oh, the good bread.
Starbucks. All of these amazing places, you know, in Stratford. So you think of it as kind of like this, oh, this is a really sweet, cute town north of London. And Bate does a really good job of painting it as, you know, one of the things we know is that John Shakespeare was fined for not clearing out the dunghill from in front of his front door.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's tiny Stratford filled with tradesmen. And these, like, you know, it's a much more rural and unassuming place for Shakespeare to land.
Mm-hmm.
than I think I ever imagined. The section about his schooling, there's a great section about rhetoric, and it breaks down some of the rules of rhetoric that Shakespeare would have learned. Mm-hmm. One of the things, you know, Shakespeare was in school 6 days a week, half days on Thursdays. But the rest of it was like 7 a.m. to sundown, 6 days a week, every week of the year.
Good God.
Except for Sundays.
Of course.
Of course.
For football.
Yeah, that's right. And American football. When he breaks down some of that, it talks about, it really shows like what the rhetoric, what the rhetorical rules are, and then how they manifested in the plays.
How do you mean that? Examples. How do you mean the rhetorical rules? Like, what, can you give me a quick example?
Yes. I think one of them was epanalepsis, which is evil. The evil that men do lives after them. And the fact that the word evil and live, evil is live spelled backwards.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's just in there. The slow return, where you repeat one word at the beginning and the end of a line. Kind is my love today, tomorrow kind.
Huh.
Counterchange, where words are repeated in inverse order. music to hear? Why hearest thou music sadly?
So these were all, those were all the verbal, like, skateboard tricks that they were doing.
That's
in
right.
Their arguments that he's employing in the plays. I did not know that. That's awesome.
It's really, it was really cool. And it was fun to hear that section every night and hear the audience, like, gasp on the evil and lives bit. Because it's like, oh, I never would have thought of that.
Right.
And of course, there it is. And yeah, and then it just, you know, they're learning all of those things so that they can become clergymen and lawyers and politicians and secretaries to politicians, all of that stuff. But a few of them take all of those things they learned for those purposes and apply it to the plays.
Sure.
And to poems. Huh. So it's really interesting to think of Shakespeare in that way.
Yeah.
And you see all these things that he learned and how he flipped them and used them for his benefit as a playwright. So I think that part was especially compelling for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little, so it's illuminating Shakespeare in a way that you wouldn't have come across otherwise, right, to the mission.
That's right. Oh, you know what, Kev? Paronomasia is the evil being lived spelled backwards. That's actually paronomasia. Epanalepsis is the slow return that I was talking about, where it goes from the one word being it's kind is my love today, tomorrow kind.
Sure. I mean, I get those confused all the time, too. No worries.
Of course.
So that's all. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Dan.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no problem.
No holds barred.
I love your guys' stuff.
Sure.
I'm sorry that the other host couldn't be here today. I really appreciate his work on the pod.
He fills a place. That's going to do it for us for this week. Thank you so much for listening. To keep in touch with us until next time, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @noholdsbarredcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. So, on behalf of the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, my name is Kevin.
And I'm Dan.
Interview subject number one.
Adieu, 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 adieu.